Welcome to another audio release from AustinBoyd.com entitled Leadership, Changing the World from the Ground Up. In this recording, you will hear the full text of Austin Boyd's December 2008 presentation to the J.F. Smith Group's quarterly leadership conference at the Ross Bridge Renaissance Hotel near Birmingham, Alabama. Mr. Smith brings all of his company together on a quarterly basis for networking and business growth planning, and invites special presentations on topics of interest for his company, one of the nation's most influential and successful fundraising firms. Austin Boyd addresses an overview of the successful crisis pregnancy ministry for which he serves in a board of directors role in Huntsville, Alabama. Choose Life is the nation's third busiest crisis pregnancy center. J.F. Smith Group served throughout 2008 in a mentoring and consultant role to assist in the fundraising for a visionary program to buy and renovate a $1.5 million facility that will meet the needs of over 4,000 young women every year. In this address, Austin Boyd casts a vision for servant leadership, the critical effort we must each take to change our culture, not waiting on politics or courts to solve critical domestic social problems. He challenges us all to tackle America's needs and transform our nation from the ground up. You can learn more about the speaker at AustinBoyd.com, and you can reach him by email. Write to info@AustinBoyd.com with comments and questions. We welcome your feedback. Extend a hand in service to someone in need. Be the hands and feet of Jesus Christ at work in the world around you. Step out on faith and become a servant leader. You too can make a difference, one life at a time.
A lot of us have probably heard about the Reader's Digest series of a long time ago, and I know I'm dating myself, but the Reader's Digest used to have a series called My Most Unforgettable Character. I have met a most unforgettable personality. I won't call him a character, although in a way he is, but the most unforgettable personality. And of all of the things I've learned from him, I've probably learned how a campaign chairman is supposed to be. And that's a great way to conduct your business, to learn how it's supposed to be done from somebody who's out there really, really doing it. This individual has the broadest range of experiences of anybody I've ever met. And to just give you one example, he teaches a Sunday school class, but the Sunday school class is on Islam. And he spent this past week in the Everglades designing and testing methods to capture drug runners in Colombia. I'm going to, in order to give you a proper background, I'm going to read you the blurb off the dust cover of one of his recent books. He's also an author. Nuclear weapons officer and spacecraft engineer, Austin Boyd flew 3,000 hours in war and peacetime operations, designed satellites, and built classified systems to track terrorists. A world traveler, NASA astronaut finalist, and inventor with multiple patents, he served on key Navy space assignments before retiring to Huntsville, Alabama, where he lives with Cindy, his wife of 30 years, and their four children. He continues to support NASA, military space, and aviation through his work with a major defense contractor. You have his card in front of you, SAIC. An active Christian, Boyd has served in a variety of lay ministries devoted to evangelism, stewardship, and crisis pregnancy. Choose Life. In addition to writing the Mars Hill Classified series, Boyd has also penned dozens of technical articles about space issues, and in his spare time, he writes award-winning poetry. To give you an example of the broad range of experiences, one day last fall, on a very, very cold day in Huntsville, I was following him, as I usually do, and he was in his six-pack pickup, tearing through Huntsville, and I'm in my Mustang trying to keep up with him, and all of a sudden he does one of these and cruises into a parking lot. I come up behind him, and he says, "Come on, Pete, I want you to meet somebody." and he runs around the side of the building. You know what I'm talking about. And here are these people huddling, cold, and they're carrying signs protesting an abortion center. There's an abortion clinic right there where they are. And he comes up to them, and he ministers to them, and he talks about the work that they're doing, and spends time making them feel good, talking about Jesus and talking about what their ministry is. And then we get together and we pray right there in the middle of the street. That's Austin Boyd.
Pete, I'm very honored by that introduction. I confess that since I'm a fiction author, I wrote it all and made it all up, but I just can't say enough good about Pete Henderson and Jerry Smith and the J.F. Smith Group. I could stand up here all day long and have make it a love-in for J.F. Smith Group quarterly meeting. But I got to tell you, Pete, who you now know is your interviewer of the year, has changed so many people's lives in Huntsville. And Jerry and all of your work that you do in your company has changed so many lives. You're going to hear about that, about the tens of thousands of people that'll benefit from what you've done. But you're lucky in life if you can have a chance to succeed in a business opportunity with another, you know, two companies. But you're really blessed in life when you can have a relationship with a member of another company who's there in support. And I'd like to say that we have a very, very strong friendship. It's a real pleasure to call you friend, Pete and Jerry, and I appreciate y'all's invitation to come today. Well, as we were meeting, some of us at breakfast, and last night talking to Pete on the phone, he'd asked that maybe I spend some time today before I get going, just letting you know a little bit more about Austin Boyd and about the kind of work we do, because it sometimes it sounds a little bit hard to believe. You know, it does sound like a novel. I'm amazed at what God's been able to do in my life and the blessings that I've been, the things I've been blessed with. So what I thought I'd do is just give you a little bit of background on who I am, because I want this to be a business opportunity. Obviously, I'm coming to speak to your quarterly meeting. This is when you are both instructed and inspired, and when you get a sense for where the business is going each quarter. This is a chance for you to get some business insights. And so what I want to talk to you about is not only the ministry we're working in, but talk about business. And so first of all, like most of the people that you work with who are your customers in nonprofits, many of the people who participate have other day jobs. So I've got a 50-hour-a-week job working at SAIC, which used to be called Science Applications International Corporation. And when we went public, we just stuck with a four-letter identifier. I'll give you a little bit of background on what I do and then what my background is, because I'm probably not unlike a lot of other guys who are real busy that take over chairmanship of campaigns. I would suspect you don't have any board people who are campaign managers when you go off and you set something up. So came to SAIC 10 years ago after a 25-year career in the Navy. I was a Navy pilot and also blessed to have a degree in space. I had always wanted to be an astronaut as a young boy. And so from age 12 forward, I said, I'm going to be an astronaut. Most people laughed at me. I said, I'll show you, and managed to get into college with a scholarship, which was the first surprise to my family. And then the second thing was to get off and get into the flight school. So you kind of keep narrowing down the opportunities here. You know, you start off like American Idol 09, right? And you keep narrowing down. And so I got past the first major cuts and was blessed to be a Navy pilot, flew in a few wartime actions, and always wanted to be an astronaut. Kept trying and trying. I was sort of like Forrest Gump. I just never gave up, just kept on running. And never got in. I applied more times than any other man in the military, man or woman in the military, and eventually I was blessed in 94 to be an astronaut finalist and went down to Houston, and that just happened to be the year they had the budget cut, and so instead of selecting six guys from the Navy, they picked one. So at least I got on the stage with the other five Miss America, you know, semifinalists, and got a chance to get some roses, but got close, but no cigar. And when my wife got sick in 98, I left the Navy so I could spend time with her, and that was the best decision I ever made. So that Navy tour and that astronautics background led to an opportunity to work for SAIC because I had a lot of technical skills. Started off with a degree in physical education. And then I went for a master's degree in EE in spacecraft engineering with a specialization in control theory. So it was a long leap from coaching badminton to doing Kalman filters and Bode plots with control theorists. So, but that was another story. Anyway, in SAIC, I work as what's called the initiatives manager for our business unit, and I am blessed to be paid to go around finding problems and solving them. So I talk to folks who have unsolvable problems, and then I go fix them. And I learned a long time ago from a dear mentor of mine, whose birthday is today, Vice Admiral Jerry Tuttle, he said that great opportunities are brilliantly disguised as unsolvable problems. And I'd leave that with you as one of your catchphrases, maybe for the next quarter of work. Great opportunities are brilliantly disguised as unsolvable problems. And that kind of describes everything I work on. This past week, as Pete mentioned, I've been in the Everglades because I had a situation arise in January. I was down showing a device we'd invented to detect methamphetamine with a little thing that looks like a flashlight, only one of its kind in the world. And they said, well, could you do another thing for us? We want to track the terrorists in the jungle in Colombia and know where they are on the rivers and trails, and we need to know that remotely. And we want to check on the terrorist picture when they go by our camera from our iPhone when we're sitting in Birmingham at a conference with Jerry Smith. And so I said, I can do that. That's not a problem. And it had never been done before, so it must be one of those great opportunities, right? So we put together a deer camera and a satellite telephone and some things that I happen to have some background in. And in 75 days, we went from absolute zero position to a successful demonstration with the alligators yesterday. We were driving up and down the rivers with a boat and detecting boats and watching people walk through jungle and dodging snakes and getting their pictures and sending it over satellite communications and watching it on a website. So we're headed to Colombia now to deploy a system. And that's the kind of work I do. So people have a problem, I go in and solve it. And you'll hear a little bit about how that kind of fits into Choose Life later, because Choose Life had an unsolvable problem that with Pete and Jerry's help, we treated as a great opportunity. So I'm here not only as a business partner with you at Choose Life, I'm also here as a technologist, although I'm really a Luddite. You know, I don't have a BlackBerry, I have a WhiteBerry. I don't have a PDA, I have 3x5 cards. So there's parts of my life that are very technology absent, and then I do a lot of work in technical systems. I also happen to write some books, and thank you for mentioning those today. And I gave you, if you want a copy, if you leave them behind, I won't be offended. But we recorded the first three chapters of each of my novels with the New York Times bestselling narrator, Paul Michael. And so you have 5 hours of easy listening pleasure if you want to listen to the first three chapters of each book. And that's a shameless marketing scheme on my part, because after you get to the end of the first three chapters, you'll want to run down to Barnes & Noble and buy the book, which would suit me just fine. And then if you want to understand the story behind the story or get the hour version of what I've shared with you at the beginning of today's talk, that's on the DVD. So for those of you from West Virginia like me, the little single one is a DVD, not a CD. My wife keeps sticking that in the car player. And the things in the plastic binder are CDs. They're not DVDs. They will not work in your movie machine. So back to this opportunity here. I met Jerry Smith about middle of the late summer, I guess it was, of last year, through another friend of Jerry's. Now, you've probably learned over time that Jerry Smith has a lot of friends. He knows a lot of people. And I was calling the local Comcast station to talk to Nancy Cloud and said, Nancy, I want to get some advertising on your channel, on Channel 3, because being in marketing, I knew that the cheapest for the per second advertising I could get would be on Channel 3. And because people use up and down buttons on the remote control, 3 is as good a station as 33. So she said, what are you trying to do? When she asked me that, I said, well, I'm going to Choose Life, and I want to do this and so forth, raising money, big building coming along. She says, have you thought about getting a consultant? Great first question. You ought to plant that question in the minds of all of your friends so that it leads, you don't say, have you thought about Jerry Smith? You say, have you thought about a consultant? And I said, I have. But we all know that consultants want a fixed price of 12% on everything they raise, and they'll get halfway there, and then I'm left with nothing. Well, she said, no, you need to meet Jerry Smith. He's a really good friend of mine, and I'd recommend that you guys have a chance to talk. Well, as it turns out, I talked to Jasmine, and I talked to Renee and some others on the telephone, and Jerry came to Huntsville, and we had a chance to present the value of an appraisal. And when he did that assessment, that appraisal pitch, I was convicted and wrote a check right there and said, Jerry, I know we'll solve all our problems if I just bring on your insights. And it started with Jerry introducing me to your company through Nancy Cloud. So don't miss those people who have jobs in other areas that are not at all related to fundraising, because they are your first point of contact. You know, we're all connected by six dimensions, right? We can all know somebody within six folks that's between us. So really important for you to get those folks out there. Well, the reason that I was at Choose Life was, once I retired from the Navy and I came to Huntsville, I had made a trip down to go hunting in South Alabama one day, and stopped in Montgomery to see some friends. And a friend of mine asked me, the wife of a friend of mine asked me, "What are you, Austin, are you pro-life or not pro-life?" And I said, "Well, I'm pro-life." And she said, "Well, what do you do?" I had to think about that a long time. I couldn't state that I did anything. I said, "Well, I vote for pro-life candidates, and I, you know, stand for conservative principles and so forth." She goes, "No, but what are you really doing? What are you doing to be the hands and feet of Jesus Christ in your community today, so that one day when you pass on, you can say, at least I was out there making a difference somehow?" And I had to confess I hadn't done anything. So through a variety of experiences, I ended up on the street doing sidewalk counseling. Now, I don't like the signs. I don't like the bullhorns, but I do like talking to people who are in need. So my focus is, if you can make eye contact with somebody, and I'm trying to make it with all of you here in the room, there's a reason for that, then you can usually connect on a personal level. And I'd make eye contact with young women who were really struggling, and then have a chance to talk to them. And some of them would make a decision to leave, and then I'd take them over to the local crisis pregnancy center, which happened to be Choose Life. Well, through a variety of circumstances, the center that I used to walk outside of on Wednesday mornings in my suit with a business card and a tract closed up. And so I didn't know what to do, but I had a real strong sense that I ought to go to this crisis pregnancy center and say, "Well, what could I do to help you? Because there's no more centers that are open in town other than Planned Parenthood." And so when I walked in the door, two ladies met me. It was the executive director and the resource director, just happened to be standing at the door. And I don't think there's any coincidence here. And I said, "I don't know why I'm here, but I just have this really strong gut feel that I'm called to come do something to help you. I can't explain it." And now I can share with them, you know, in a more personal level, how I felt like God was really leading me there. The lady started to cry. And I said, "Why are you crying?" He said, "Well, the thing that you told us you could do to help, Austin, was you didn't understand anything about counseling, but you said the two things you understand is how to raise money and how to build buildings. And you don't know it, but we spent 5 years absolutely out of space, and we're desperate for a new facility, and we've been praying that someone would walk in the door and show us how to go find a new place to set up shop." So I knew right there that's where I was supposed to be. And so I'm involved in Choose Life because I used to walk the streets as a sidewalk counselor. I walked in someplace and said, "I know how to raise money." And little did I know how little I knew, because I thought I understood it until I met Jerry Smith and J.F. Smith Group. And now I can say I truly do understand fundraising, and it's nothing like what I thought I understood. So point number two, as you're talking to potential clients, you can talk about this guy that's won billions of dollars in business who thought he understood fundraising, and he really didn't understand a thing about it. There are some incredible fundamentals that you share. You provide a backbone that you can put meat on. And the J.F. Smith, ABCD, McDonald's, West Coast, East Coast, that really works. And I would be an advocate for you, an endorser anywhere you could call me in, because we were on the wrong path and you turned us around. And I have all of you to thank for our success. So Jerry comes in, does an assessment, and the first thing I keep hearing from Pete as he's taken over as a program manager, "You're a very unusual project for J.F. Smith Group." I think I've heard that about 100 times. We're different. There's something about us that is just off the wall. And I think it's not just because we're a crisis pregnancy center, but there's a whole lot of things that make us unique. And that's been good for both of us. It stretched us, I can tell you in a big way, to learn from you. And I think something about us has stretched you a little bit. You know, I'll be right up front with you. In case you haven't heard in the financials, we have not hit our goal. And as the leader of the campaign, that's largely my fault because I didn't delegate enough. But we now know what we need to do to be on path, and we will, by the end of our closing of the date of the campaign, we will hit our goal. I have no doubt about it, because now I know what I was doing wrong, even once I got involved. I kept using my mindset instead of Jerry and Pete's mindset, and now I'm in the groove. I was halfway there. I was kind of hanging on to the pickup truck by my fingernails as they were racing down the road. Now I'm in the pickup truck with them, so I know where to go. So I want to thank you for what you're doing. You are now making a difference, not only at Choose Life, but as I've talked to others about what you're doing, you're making a huge difference as a company in the Southeast United States. You are transforming schools. You are transforming educational institutions. You're transforming new ministries like the Poor Sisters down in Mobile and making things happen for organizations that had no earthly idea how to stay alive from a financial perspective or a volunteer perspective. And not only are you saving lives in Huntsville, Alabama, but you guys are truly what I call servant leaders out in the community. You are the unsung heroes of these 501c3s. Without you, many very critical organizations would fail. And I just want to say thank you from all of us on the board of directors at Choose Life and for the 69,000 women that I'll tell you about in a minute. We thank you for what you've done to make a difference in Huntsville and in Choose Life. So let's talk a little bit about what Choose Life is. Choose Life is a crisis pregnancy center, otherwise known by the acronym nationwide as a CPC. There are 2,322 CPCs in the United States as of last week, as monitored by the CareNet organization nationwide. And these are generally small offices of folks who provide a pregnancy test for a young woman who's in the midst of a crisis pregnancy and gives her a series of options in the midst of her crisis pregnancy. At Choose Life in Huntsville, we're a little bit different, and I'm going to share some statistics with you in the next 10 minutes that I hope will change your understanding of what a crisis pregnancy center is. I'll tell you right now that every single person in this room will be touched by crisis pregnancy. It is a fact. You will have a friend or a family member or you or an employee or someone that you know on the street will have some impact from crisis pregnancy center or from crisis pregnancy, either the terminated pregnancy or a pregnancy perhaps for a teen. And if you know about what these are, then you can do something to help somebody else. Just refer them, like Nancy Cloud referred me to Jerry, and I'm standing here because someone cared enough to say, do you know about consultants, or do you know about a crisis pregnancy center? In Huntsville, we see 4,000 girls every year just in our pregnancy test center. We have another 1,000 to 6,000 kids that we teach abstinence every year, and hundreds of girls that come to us for post-abortive healing or for help with adoption awareness. So how do I navigate that red tape and reach someone like Lifeline in Birmingham? 4,000 girls a year, and we're on a path now that we're in this new building that I'll tell you about to 4,200 girls a year. We have seen in the past 28 years now, we've seen 67,000 women in Huntsville. That's more than one half of all the women who live in the Huntsville-Madison community between Madison and in Limestone counties. Now, that doesn't mean half of them came to see us, but I'm saying that many women have come in to see us over the time. Now, a lot of people ask me, why is that true? Is it that Huntsville, Alabama is so oversexed that you have a whole lot more activity going on in Huntsville and so everybody's getting pregnant? Well, it doesn't happen that way. In fact, Huntsville is no different than any place else. Now, the reason that we have 4,000 girls coming to see us and not in Birmingham, the reason that Huntsville's Choose Life Crisis Pregnancy Center is the busiest crisis pregnancy center in all of the Southeast, Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, busiest center in all the Southeast. The reason that we're the third busiest center in the whole nation, you know, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., New York, Detroit, the reason that we do is because we've found that the model is you must have a non-judgmental, loving, caring approach to every young woman who walks through that door. You know, I don't want to go too spiritual on you here, but there's a verse in Romans, book of Romans in the New Testament that says that we've all fallen short of the glory of God. We've all sinned. It's Romans 3:23. And, you know, that's the truth. We've all made mistakes. And so if we're going to judge a young woman who walks in the door and say, you know, you're a tramp because you're pregnant, boy, what an incredible hypocrisy, especially for men who celebrate sex in college, and what a great time, and then they turn around and they point fingers at a young woman who gets pregnant out of wedlock. A non-judgmental approach is the only way to approach crisis pregnancy centers, or crisis pregnancy, and so that's what we do. We meet every girl at her point of need, and there's a reason why you do that. Now, I'm going to tell you, I will touch your heart in this room, and you're going to feel it, but you're not going to talk about it, and I know you're there, and so I just want to let you know I'm not trying to point at anybody here, man or woman, but one in three women in the United States today, from my age down, so that's the folks who were teens, young teens in 1973, I'm 54 right now, so I was 19 then, one in three women will terminate at least one pregnancy in her lifetime in the whole United States. And inside the church, that number is 1 in 4. Now, here's the big three 1 in 4s. 1 in 4 women in the church in the Southeast will terminate a pregnancy in her lifetime. 1 in 4 teen girls in America will be pregnant as a teen. And that's not a made-up number. That's a number for the National Institutes of Health and from a number of other sources. So if you have a teen daughter, stand 4 of them up in your kitchen one day, 1 in 4 of those girls is going to be pregnant as a teen. Bless you. Now, that doesn't mean that she'll deliver. There's a 1 in 3 chance that she'll terminate a pregnancy, but 1 in 4 will get pregnant. And 1 in 4 youth between the age of 14 and 24 today have a sexually transmitted disease. Right now, they've got it. So it's a national epidemic, and we have to do something to address this. Now, we can go off and scream about it, or we can get active. And so that's what I'm here to talk about today, is how we get active on the street and help out. But we need to recognize that this is not just a woman's problem. You know, I tell everybody I talk to, and I want to share with you very openly here, that I'm the face of crisis pregnancy in America. We have crisis pregnancy in America because we've developed this immense hypocrisy where a young man in college celebrates losing his virginity and how many girls he can sleep with. And at the same time, we turn around and look at a young woman who's pregnant out of wedlock and we say, what a tramp. If you have teenagers, the new term is skank. Okay, so look at the skank who's sleeping around. But the guys are going, man, I can't wait. We also have this incredible hypocrisy for people of our age who are post-abortive, and I'll share my story in a minute, where we say in the churches and in organizations, abortion is wrong. And we make such an issue about how wrong it is that we shut up the poor women that need to have a chance to talk about their prior post-abortive experience. They're not going to stand up if you're throwing stuff in their face, throwing acid in their face and sticking a finger in their chest and saying, you made a mistake. They're going to keep quiet. So what we've done is we've driven this down into people and created this black hole inside of men and women, mostly women. But there's a few post-abortive men out there too. And so the reason I'm involved is I was in a relationship with one young woman in college, 2 weeks between Thanksgiving and Christmas break, and it wasn't a lot of times, but you know what? She came to me when I started acting like I was getting a little bit goosey about being too close, and she said, Austin, I'll do anything to keep you. You know, those were magic words to a young man who was 19 years of age in college. But then I decided I don't want to get married. I don't want to be tied down. And so I said some incredibly ugly things to that young woman. Some of you women have probably had that experience. So she turned away, and she showed what I know now as post-abortive indicators when she was in the next semester. This was at Christmas, and she couldn't understand why I didn't call, and I got ugly to her when I came back. And so I now believe that I may have fathered a child. Maybe not. Likely I didn't. She never said she was pregnant, and oftentimes the girls don't. But I'm involved in this because it's a man's problem too. And what the men can do is they can get their butts off their seats and get active, pull out their wallets and do something to make a difference from a financial perspective, because we cannot counsel young women. That's just inappropriate. But we can make these centers succeed. And as I said, there's about 2,300 of them around the nation. So our goal, our model, is to meet every girl at her point of need. What we do is when a young woman comes in the door at Choose Life, we meet her in a medical type of an environment, sit them down, give them a sheet they fill out, tell us how old they are and where they're from and what the number is, we can contact them. And we also ask them, incidentally, what church they attend if they're willing to share that. Then we take them back with a counselor. We have an army of volunteers. 75 women who dedicate 2 days a month to come down and work with us. And they'll bring the young woman back. She'll take a urine test first. We'll hear her story. There's always this between a rock and a hard spot, okay? Some of you have known somebody in that position where you just don't know what you're going to do. So you've come down looking for an option. And then we share some Bible messages with her. We share a gospel message with her to let her know that we love her and that she's still loved and that there's still options for her. She doesn't have to give up. At that point, we bring the test back in, and it's an interesting point. The women will understand this immediately. The guys will be shocked. But only 50% of the 4,000 girls a year who come to our door in a crisis pregnancy are actually pregnant. All those other girls, 2,000 girls a year, have missed a cycle because they were scared to death about their activity, and that stress has induced an amenorrhea, or they miss a cycle. And now they're scared spitless, and they miss the second cycle. And they think about 2 weeks, you know, I got another one coming in about 14 days. I got to do something about this. And they're always 10 weeks to 12 weeks when they finally decide to do something about it. And that's why most of the women we see are 10 to 12 weeks pregnant. So the girls that are not pregnant, there's this sigh, but they've already heard the gospel presentation. They already know that God loves them. They already know that there's another opportunity for them to start over. And they go out the door with a smile on their face and looking for a new opportunity in life. The other 2,000, though, the first thing we try to do is to turn them right into an appointment for an ultrasound. Now, I heard a couple of the ladies at breakfast talking about, did you see the baby on the ultrasound? Is it a boy? I can't remember who that was. I was listening to at breakfast, but overheard a conversation. But ultrasounds are the most amazing tool nowadays. We won our first ultrasound in Birmingham in a raffle 6 years ago. Now, there's not, you know, you see the Powerball signs going up in Tennessee. Well, there's not a big, ultrasound raffle billboard out there, but it so happened that someone had an ultrasound to give away, and there were so many applicants for the ultrasound, they couldn't figure out which was the most worthy applicant, so they just drew straws. We pulled the short straw. That changed our life. Got that ultrasound in, went and actively solicited one doctor to help us out as an ultrasound obstetrician, so an OBGYN who came in. We asked him to volunteer his time. Once we got that one doctor and that one ultrasound, seven more obstetricians have now volunteered. We have 8 obstetricians on staff, all working for free, all giving up their time at their local GYN clinic, and losing revenue in order to help girls out at our clinic. So we do ultrasounds every day, every weekday, and we're going to Saturdays. We now have 10 volunteers who've been trained as sonographers. So we have 8 obstetricians, 10 sonographers. We have more obstetricians on staff in our clinic than any other of the 2,322 centers in the nation. And all because we developed a volunteer base, which is a fundamental of your whole approach to doing business. But we developed a volunteer base, and those folks are now providing us that capability. If the girl sees her baby on an ultrasound, what we've discovered is that 95% of the women who see a baby's form or a baby's face on an ultrasound will make a decision not to terminate a pregnancy. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to have the baby and keep it. They may deliver the child and then give it up for adoption, but 95% of the women who see a baby won't terminate a pregnancy. And what's amazing is at 12 weeks, it's about the, if you could take a piece of double bubble chewing gum, okay, that's about the right volume. A 12-week-old baby is like a double bubble chewing gum. Now, that doesn't look like much when you're looking at the double bubble chewing gum, but if you put that on an ultrasound and you put it on a great big 36-inch diagonal screen monitor like Jerry Smith has recently purchased for us out of his own pocket, and we appreciate that, Jerry. That's a real blessing. As she's laying on her back and there's a big ultrasound in front of her and you're looking at fully formed fingers and toes and you're watching a heartbeat and you see a brain and a spine, and it's moving around and sucking its thumb and waving at you, then you can't help but be transformed by that image. One quick story. A young woman comes in with her pregnancy issue. We get her on the table right away for an ultrasound. And the sonographer, she's looking away. She will not look at the screen. Shocked look on that girl just would give you chills, and she turned her head around and looked at the screen and says, "What do you mean?" She says, "I just asked because the baby's hands are moving like it were playing the piano, and I've never seen that before in an ultrasound." The young woman was a piano major at the University of Alabama at Huntsville. I can tell you story after story after story like that every single day the miracles that happened. That girl changed her mind right there, Johnny on the spot. Many other stories just like it. That ultrasound changes lives. Now, if the girl makes the decision to deliver the child, she has a choice of going for an adoption or going to raise and parent the child. And there's a lot of women out there who are not prepared to parent. Our youngest client today is 11 years old. The youngest mother in Alabama 2 years ago was 10. So, guys, it's starting this is an elementary school problem nowadays. Third graders having sex, fourth graders having sex. And what you need to know is that the younger the girl, the older the guy, okay? So if you have a 10-year-old mother, you're going to have a 19 or 20-year-old father. And as you get to a 15-year-old mother, you're going to have a 16-year-old father. And then once they're 17, they kind of pair up from there on out. So it's older men taking advantage of these younger girls. But if the girl decides to parent, we have what we call a life choices program, where we line right up there with her instead of throwing her over the fence, which is what happens on the street side. I got to tell you, I don't like street side counseling anymore because I realize how many girls we just left alone. It's like saying, here's do is we walk with them, we put a mother or a grandmother as a mentor, and we walk with that young woman all the way through her pregnancy, helping her get all the prenatal support she needs. We have free stuff for everything. We have prenatal vitamins, prenatal doctor support, prenatal delivery, you know, all the way up to delivery. And that can all be done for free. We have the right people. Interesting story, my son married a young woman from Huntsville. Her mother is the lady on the other end. She's at Huntsville Hospital, where we send people that then need prenatal support all the way through delivery. So we've kind of made the families, pulled it all together here, interesting. If she wants it, we then provide mentoring through the first year of the baby's life. So we provide maternity clothes in her pregnancy and baby clothes all the way to 1 year old. We provide all the cribs and the food and the diapers, you name it. And if she needs a job or a car or a place to live, or she needs tutoring in school, or she needs to get into college, whatever it is, we take that need and we post it in our newsletter, and every single time for 27 years, every girl who had a need got what she needed. We've given cars and houses, and you know, we don't do trips to London and boats and stuff like that, but everything that they really need has always come to pass. It's been remarkable. Now, if she decides that she can't parent a child, and many young women can't for a variety of reasons, it's okay, because adoption is the loving option. In Alabama last year, there were 10,000 terminated pregnancies and only 250 to 300 adoptions in any given year. And the reason that there's not more adoptions is that all these people are waiting for a baby, but they're terminated. We can't have a baby, and so there's not enough kids to go around. So a lot of folks are searching out international adoptions because they're a better chance of getting through the adoption process. So if we had fewer babies terminated, we'd have more that were available for adoption, and there's a lot of parents lined up that want them. But we help a girl navigate the maze. And the maze can be significant. If you've known anybody who's been through the adoption wickets, they ask questions that they just have no right to ask. I mean, it's tougher to adopt somebody nowadays than it, you know, well, let's just put it this way. Nobody interviews you when you decide to have a child. You know, are you a good parent? Nobody asks. But if you want to adopt a child, you have to go through, 900 questions of mother may I. It's a ridiculous system. But we help them fix that or get through that. Now, one out of three women will terminate a pregnancy, so not everybody makes a decision to carry the baby to term. So we have a Healing Hands ministry, and what we do is it's a confidential counseling ministry for young women who want to be, and older women who want to be counseled on a one-on-one basis. We also have the program available for young women who want to get into a group type of a session. So we'll have a 6 or 7 woman group always meeting, and it'll meet for 6 weeks. And then we end with a memorial service and name the child and help them to go through the grieving process and realize that God still loves them. And while it's a very bad part of their history, we can wash that slate clean and it can be forgotten by the Lord and they can move on. And that's a really important point in a woman's life, because a lot of women have, and some guys have, put this incredible canker around that black spot in their life, and then it affects their marriages and it affects their relationship with their children, and it affects their health, and we can get them past that. It's amazing to see people set free. Two other ministries we have do abstinence training for up to 6,000 kids a year. The state of Alabama has an abstinence-only state-approved curriculum. So we teach the same thing that's in the schools. The problem is that a lot of school counselors don't want to teach sex education, don't want to teach abstinence. They'll call us. We go in and do that for them. And then last of all, we take a portion of all of our proceeds, and we support a mission in Romania. In Romania, 5 years ago, 75% of all pregnancies were terminated. Today, the number is 52% of all pregnancies are terminated. So the numbers are coming down, and we run a clinic with the folks who support gypsies. The gypsy community is particularly abortion-minded, and so we have a clinic for gypsy women over in Romania that we travel over to and help on a regular basis. So, we try to meet the needs of every girl. We try to meet every girl at her point of need. And people ask the question, well, if you see 4,000 girls a year in Huntsville, then why can't we do this other places? And the bottom line is that you could do this anywhere if you had the resources. With the right passion, with the right resources, and with the right kind of service, you can change the culture. So the title of my speech that I'm kind of narrowing down on is Leadership, Changing the Culture from the Ground Up. Through your help, through your servant leadership of helping us to develop a fund and donor and volunteer base, we are able to transform the culture of Huntsville, Alabama. So that leads me then to my big, hairy, audacious vision, my behave. And my wife says I don't behave very well, and you can dress me up but can't take me out. I'm going to talk to you about my behave, my big, hairy, audacious vision, because this is where I believe that we can work together. I want to see change in the culture in America related to this issue of terminated pregnancies. And I want your help. What do I want to do? I believe that we can cut the abortion rate in the United States of America by one half in 10 years. Now, currently, there's an abortion every 26 seconds. To work that out, that means that we've lost about 40 million children since 1973 in the Roe v. Wade decision. With the current abortion rate, it's about one abortion every 26 seconds. We can cut that rate in half, so it's about one a minute, and save a lot of lives, thousands, tens of thousands of lives every year, if, and this is how, if we reduce the demand on abortion clinics and we give women a choice for where to go. Because what's happening largely outside this Huntsville community, there's not a large number of women who feel like they have a choice. I'm pro-choice. I believe everybody ought to have a choice. I just want you to choose life. But I want you to know that you've got an opportunity to make a decision. You're not stuck between a rock and a hard spot like so many girls think they are when they come to the street at the abortion clinic. And a lot of guys will look at those girls at the clinic and say, well, how could they ever make that decision? I am convinced that no woman wants to abort a child, but they have no other choice. They are stuck because they've got a parent or a spouse or a boyfriend running or a job issue or a school issue, and they're just between a rock and a hard spot. So we need to show them a loving alternative, and so there's a way to do that. So I want to transform the culture by changing the abortion rate by 50%, and this is how we can do it. We're all in business here with J.F. Smith Group and at SAIC, and we need to look at the abortion business as a business. What we've observed in Huntsville is that 10 years ago, there were 3 full-time abortion clinics. Today, there's 1 office operating 2 days a week. So what happened in Huntsville that is not happening elsewhere? What happened was that the girls who went in, 4,000 of them a year, into our office, found an option, so they decided not to go to the other office. And I've met center directors, become friends with Linda and several others who I won't give their last names, who run abortion clinics, and they've all shared with me, we've become friends. Too many people get in this adversarial relationship. So I've befriended the guards and befriended the directors because I found that if I could understand them as human beings, I could understand the problem better. And what they've shared with me is, Austin, I have to make a profit. And if I can't make a profit running the center, I have to close. That's the number one point. If you guys don't make revenue and you don't make a profit, then Jerry's going to shut this down and we're not going to have meetings every quarter. It's all about the profit because it's a business. It's not a service. Now, Choose Life is a service. There is no revenue. All of our services are free. But if we can bring the demand down, then people will, there'll be more babies born. So how do you do that? Well, I told you that 95% of all the women who see a baby on an ultrasound make a decision to not terminate a pregnancy. So my West Virginia logic says, let's put an ultrasound in front of every pregnant girl. That shouldn't be too hard to do. In fact, there are people right now on the streets in Atlanta, they'll pull up a sonography van in front of an abortion clinic, and they'll give a $100 bill to any young woman who will come in and get her picture taken, so to speak, get a sonogram. And she walks out of there, she can take that $100 bill and right across the street to the abortion clinic if she wants to. But every one of those girls who walks in, they've had 400 babies saved because, as they say, decision not to terminate because the girl saw the picture of the baby. But you know what? Ultrasounds aren't cheap. They cost $25,000 on discount. And it's not inexpensive to develop a center to use the ultrasound, and you got to have a building, and you have to have a license, and you have to have volunteers, and you have to have an OB, or have to have a sonographer. So how do you do that? Well, that's where the opportunity, I think, comes for some folks that have your types of experience. So my My big, hairy, audacious vision is that we extend a caring hand to every young woman in crisis in the United States of America, and we do that by focusing on serving. Now, I'm going to digress from this issue of abortion and pro-life a second to just talk about how we transform the culture, and then I'll conclude. We need to transform the culture in this country by focusing on service and not focusing on politics. For too long, we've waited on the appointment of a president or a governor who would put in place judges who would view cases that would result in laws that would lead to activities that would then result in a conclusion. So we'll say, for example, it's heinous that men and women have to sleep under bridges in Huntsville, Alabama, because they have no place to live. We need to elect leaders who will pass laws in the state legislature to lead to the building of bigger centers so that we can house more homeless people. And I'm really sorry to see those people under that bridge, but we've got to elect a better governor or elect a better senator or elect a better representative. Guys, you can be sitting around here waiting until hell freezes over for that to happen, because it's just not going to happen in a lot of cases. The people that you're waiting on to make this move aren't as interested in it as you are. The way we solve that homeless person's plight is we provide the center for that homeless person to go sleep in. We either go down and we support the Downtown Rescue Mission in Huntsville, Alabama, or we go work with First Stop and take care of the guys who sleep under bridges and don't want to leave the bridge, or we go work with the Salvation Army and we volunteer in a food van and we give food out to people on Monday and Wednesday evenings for our church. That's what we do at First Baptist. Or we get out there and do something, maybe just pull out our pocketbook and make a difference. But we've got to change the culture in this country by serving, and by serving we lead. There's a great book out there called The Heart of a Servant Leader, and that's what I'm talking about here. If we will serve, we will lead others to become involved. We shouldn't be waiting around on the government to take care of our indigent aunt and increase her Social Security benefits next year by lobbying our congressman to increase Social Security benefits. We need to write a check to Ann every month so that Ann can afford her medicine. I've been convinced of this since I was young, and Cindy has an indigent aunt. I wasn't related to her, but the lady's just poor as a church mouse, always sick, had cancer forever. I don't know how she keeps hanging on. So we send Ann a check every month. Now, we're not sending Ann much, but you know what? That gets Ann some important medication she needs. Before we had Social Security in 1950, what did we do with people who were sick? What did we do with people who were homeless? What did we do with people who were in need? Well, we provided it. We understood service. But once we started looking at politics as the arbiter of change, we lost that focus. So let's do something other than politics. Let's focus on service, and specifically, let's be servant leaders. It's no longer time for us to wait on the politicians. So service through Choose Life is where I want to be placed. And my goal is that we can, by enabling through servant leadership the other crisis pregnancy centers in the state, we can change that abortion rate in the state. So here's my plan. And then I'll wrap up and we'll do a dialogue. There are 49 crisis pregnancy centers in the state of Alabama. Of those 49 centers, 42 do not have an ultrasound machine. They don't have the dollars, they don't have the facilities, they don't even understand how to run a business. They are passionate women who are dedicated to being there for a young woman who's in crisis. And most of them are women who were in crisis as young women, and they wish somebody had been there for them. Well, what I propose is, let's go buy every one of those centers an ultrasound. $25,000 a piece. So I went out looking for a team. It's just like a business. I'm going to treat this like a business objective. So I went out and I talked to Sonosite, the only U.S. manufacturer of sonography equipment. Everything else is made overseas, GE and all the rest of them. Sonosite, based out of Seattle, sent their regional sales rep and their local sales rep to Huntsville, and we had a meeting. And Sonosite jumped on this thing with all feet. You know, three people there at the meeting, and they were just jumping on the table down at Rosie's when we talked about it. They want to be involved. They're going to sell it at a full discount all the way off down to their wholesale price, and then cut below that. We're going to get these devices right at the bare bones discount, $25,000 each. And then they're going to give a 5-year warranty on these devices, and they're going to go by every center once a month and check on them and keep their sales representative moving around, because if we can find a way to fund those ultrasounds, this is paid marketing. This is good business for them. They're out there seeing the doctors. Their sonography equipment is in the hands of every one of these pro-life doctors, and they're going to sell more ultrasounds. So it's good business for them. Okay, so where do I find that money for those ultrasounds? I'll get to that in a second. Because it's not enough to just put an ultrasound in the hand of every center, because some of these people just don't know how to manage a buck. And you've worked with those 501c3s that have a great vision but no earthly idea how to manage their way out of a business proposition. So what we need is we need people who can teach the crisis pregnancy center how to develop a donor base. How do you develop a volunteer base? How do you raise funds? Remember I told you that when I met Jerry and Pete, I didn't realize how little I knew about fundraising. And I knew a lot. I'd been the chairman of three different churches' stewardship campaigns. I had worked in a variety of fundraising activities in the past, and I'd always raised money across the country. I raised $40,000 a dinner when I do a pro-life talk. I know how to raise money, but I thought I understood it, but I didn't understand it like they understand it, okay? I was a first grader. They're out of college. So what we need is we need the expertise of a J.F. Smith Group-like organization to be in every one of those places, but just enough to get them going. I'm not talking about giving away a $100,000 job for $10,000, but get them enough to make them recognize how little they know. So what I'm proposing is that I will find the donors to provide us $1 million to buy 40 ultrasounds at $25,000 a piece, and Jerry and I have been in conversations about how we could create a structure where we put those people with a passion to follow up on this activity out in the field with Alabama crisis pregnancy centers, a few visits to teach them the fundamentals of fundraising. You know, put that book, for example, 40 Mistakes That Bedevil Every Board, and a couple of other fundamentals, the ABCDs that Jerry's talking about, just the real core fundamentals in their hands. And they'll go, oh, golly, yeah, I can do that. Take a few Pete Hendersons and Amanda Griffins and run out there in the field and have a few meetings, a few days with a few key people in the community. Let them walk with you and teach the crisis pregnancy center how to fish. Instead of giving them money, let's teach them how to raise themselves up. Now, the beauty of this approach is we would not only, by paying you to do that, create a cadre of smart, at least smart enough to know what they don't know, crisis pregnancy centers. We also create for you 42 new clients with a paid marketing approach. So what I need to do is I'm going to go out and find $1 million to pay you to go see 40 clinics for about $25,000 worth of whatever we can get for $25K. I know for $25K I can get them at least smart enough to know what they don't know. Okay? And then they're in a position I was where they can say, man, we need to raise some money and go to an assessment. And then we need to raise some money and bring in J.F. Smith Group and help us with a fundraising activity. Because if we can get them up to a common baseline, we can get everybody baselined, then these people know enough to stay viable when they get that free ultrasound. $2 million could change 40 centers in the state of Alabama, and we could have them all visited and changed in 3 years. I believe the state rate for abortion would drop by one half in 10 years, just like we've seen it drop by way more than that in Huntsville. We've gone again from 3 centers to 1 doing part-time 2 days a week. Okay, so why? That's audacious, Austin, but it's not big and hairy. What makes it big and hairy is there are 2,322 centers in the United States of America. 2,075 of them do not have an ultrasound. Well, it's only $51 million to go buy every center in America an ultrasound. And you have been on fundraising activities with schools that raised $50 million. $50 million is not a lot of money. In my business, it's not a lot of money at all. I'm running a $220 million a year business unit inside of a $700 million organization and part of a $9 billion business. You guys see $50 million go through nonprofits all the time. And another $50 million would mentor 2,075 crisis pregnancy centers in how to do business. Well, you talk about a challenging goal. How are the 25 of you guys going to get out to 2,075 centers in 3 years? We have to grow. So what I want to do is I'm going to go find people, and I've already talked to key donors who are looking for the big project. I had one guy tell me, in Pete's presence, I can buy that building, Austin, times over. I want to know what's a big project we could do besides the building. There are people who want to put that kind of money
in place because they don't know how to make the difference. They just know that they're called to make a difference. You guys are the incredible central key to making that happen. You are the servant leaders who can teach those sinners who don't know squat about how to raise money and sometimes how to manage it. You can teach them how to bring those dollars in, how to develop those key donors, and how to develop those key volunteers. If we can use expertise, then we'll succeed. In conclusion, my vision is that we raise up an army of people who have a servant leader mentality, and they want to transform the culture by being involved at the bottom and transforming the culture from the ground up, instead of waiting for a politician to appoint someone who's going to change our lives from the top down. And I think if we all have that focus, and it doesn't have to be pro-life, you might be passionate about hungry people, okay? And so you want to do something for hunger in your community, and so you get out there and you get involved and you go find people who are also involved and you find ways to develop their resource bank. That's the kind of work you do. And you give them the key tool that they need. It's an ultrasound in a crisis pregnancy center. But I tell you what, at Salvation Army, this is my other passion, every Salvation Army needs a food van. We've got this ratty old food van that's just not good for anything that we serve food in every night. And I just say, man, I could get five different car companies together and buy the slick food van and we could see more people and give out more food. Okay? And those guys have the resources to do that. Less now than they used to, but they still have resources. Or you might be passionate about kids who are abused. Once upon a time, Bud Kramer, who is our representative, was passionate as the district attorney in Huntsville about the fact that kids were being abused and they had no place to go. If you don't know the story, this is a true story, I know Bud well, and the success is in Huntsville to see. A young girl who was about 8 or 9 years old came to Bud's office, and Bud, as the DA, was quizzing her about what happened, what did this man do to you, and going through the whole litany. And she's crying as she tells the story. And finally, she stops and she looks at him and she says, "Don't you big people ever talk to each other?" And when Bud heard that, he realized that what they needed was one place that little baby, that little girl, that little child could talk to one person, and then everybody get the data. The cops and the FBI and the social workers would all get it. From that sprang a children's advocacy center. Today, the National Center for the Children's Advocacy Centers is in Huntsville, Alabama, and they are in 60 locations around the country and springing up every day. Just like crisis pregnancy centers, these are places that meet children who are in abused relationships at their point of need, and they get one person who loves them dearly, and they take care of all their needs because Bud cared. Now, Bud dealt with it a different way. Bud happened to be in politics, and he could push money down, but there are a lot of people who raised money in Huntsville. We sat down with Tom Hauser last week, who was a chairman for the fundraiser for the National Children Advocacy Center, and they raised $11 million, I think, over a year and a half period to put that in place. We can change the culture from the ground up. It doesn't have to be pro-life. It's whatever you're passionate about, but we need to do it from the bottom. We can't afford to sit back. We can't afford to depend on leadership. We need to be servants first and not care who gets the credit. Folks, in closing, I believe that together, with your help and with a servant leader mentality, we can transform America. Thank you for the time to be here today, and I really appreciate what you've done to change our lives in Huntsville. Thank you.
To learn more about Austin Boyd's books and ministry, visit austinboyd.com. To contact Austin Boyd with questions, comments, or to request Austin as a speaker for your next event, contact him at info@austinboyd.com. For other speeches, information, or materials by Austin Boyd, visit us on the web at austinboyd.com.